Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi everybody, producer Al here. Great to be back for another season and great to be back with another re-release here on the Monday podcast feed. This time, it's time for Classic Teams, first recorded for patrons back in 2018. We took a look at some of the very best sides in Spanish football history. Now, for more of this sort of thing, all of our TSFP Presents series, Rincón Cultural, my pay-per-views, bonus pods, Q&As, all the rest, join us over at patreon.com/TSFP. But for now, this episode from 2018, Phil, Sid and I discussed the great Deportivo La Coruña.
Hello patrons, welcome to another series of TSFP Presents. In our last series, of course, we took you around Spain in regions and rivalries. Prior to that, we delved into the archives to speak about 21st century La Liga legends. This series, we're going back into the archives to talk about classic teams. Producer Al says it's a good name because it's to the point. I felt like we could have worked on it a bit.
I feel like in terms of punchy titles, yeah. I wanted a two-word, like regions and rivalries, yeah, 21st century legends. But you know what I mean. And so I wanted something punchy, and it was just a case of an adjective with teams. We thought of great teams. You know, we've already had legends, it couldn't be legends. Look, the title isn't the most important thing, guys, it's the content.
And the content is going to be us talking about classic teams of La Liga over the whole range of years and decades. We put the question out on Twitter for your suggestions, and we had a really good response.
Loads.
Some teams that we hadn't even occurred to us and actually thought, oh God, yeah, maybe we should do them. We've got too many suggestions for us to do them all, but we will let you know which team we are doing with
a
week in
advance. We can always have a series two if it's successful.
We can. I say that we will let you know a week in advance the team that we're doing. We haven't actually thought of past episode two, but episode one is Deportivo La Coruña, Euro Depor and Super Depor, of which Sid knows a lot, and you've actually written a lot because you're sending us some of your articles over the last decade or so about Depor. Really good pieces. We're actually going to put some up on the
Patreon. Making myself feel very old, basically.
Yeah.
The old man tells the young whippersnappers what used to happen in the good old days.
Going back to the archives, which are just your own columns that you've written yourself. Yeah.
But you know something? Actually, age is actually quite an interesting thing about this Depor side, because Al and I are, as we confirmed yesterday, 8 years younger than you, which means that our footballing experience and introduction to Spanish football was a little bit different to yours. And I think that people of, I can hesitate to use this word, but my and Al's generation.
you pair of bastards.
But for us, this, particularly the Euro Depor side of the turn of the century, was the first Spanish side that really sort of captivated the imagination.
Yes, I think that's true. Making a name for themselves on the European stage, beating all comers, as we will discuss. I think that's definitely true. I also think, in terms of why so many people have affection for these Depor sides, I think we always have affection for a team that challenges the duopoly of Barcelona and Real Madrid.
Yeah.
There's always a lot of affection. There is now for Atletico, there was a decade ago for Valencia, and before that it was Depor.
Mm. And there was a way they played as well. Mm. I mean, they were genuinely a lot of fun to watch. There were criticisms towards the end of Irueta about his kind of weddedness to that doble pivote, the double pivot in midfield. There were suggestions at times that he was a little overcautious, but then people always said, well, if he'd been a little bit more kind of expansive, maybe Depor would have won more things. Well, Deportivo La Coruña won a league title in a 16-year period in which only Atletico Madrid had taken a league title off Madrid and Barcelona when they won the double in 96, at a time when it was almost impossible, and it still is kind of now, I suppose, to win the league and not be Madrid or Barcelona, and did it playing really quite good football most of the time, although that was a very strange league title. They won the league having been beaten 11 times that year.
Wow, La Liga is boring and uncompetitive.
Yeah.
Yeah. The period we're talking about basically is start sort of 1992-93 and goes up towards 2004.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, this is kind of part of it. When you talk about Super Depor, and in a way, you know, as you've already pointed out, there's kind of two different teams here. There's Super Depor and there's Euro Depor. And in a way, Super Depor just gets applied to both of them. It's a sort of a relatively long stretch, and really it's sort of, it's not quite two teams, but it's sort of two teams.
There's a dip in the middle.
There's a dip in the middle, and then the kind of, you know, the resurgence of the team, if you like. Obviously, it's also because it's identified with two different managers, Arsenio Iglesias to start with, and then Javier Hidueta, because relatively few players span both generations. Obviously, Donato is one of them.
Mauro Silva,
Mamo Pablo. But it does feel like two teams, and yet at the same time, it also feels like part of an era, not least because I think there's a nostalgia because of the fact that most people believe this is never coming back.
That's really quite a depressing thought in a way, the idea that maybe this can no longer happen because of the way that football has changed.
There's one way of framing this, and you know, this is, I must admit, going back to one of the articles I wrote, there's a moment when in the year, I think it might even be the season that they go down, when it's either 2009 or maybe it's 2011 is when they went down. Yeah. I can't remember if this happened in 9 when they were in danger of going down, or in 11 when they actually did, and Miguel Angel Lotina, the manager at the time, is asked for his team at the weekend, and he starts reeling off his team, and it starts with the goalkeeper he's actually got, which I think was Dani Aranzubia at the time, and he mentions, I think, Manuel Pablo, and then he segues into Nabet, Donato, I think he says Capdevila as his fullback. He then goes in through the midfield and basically names the Super Depor team, or at least players of that kind of successful generation. His team is actually a bit of a hybrid of the two generations as well, and there's a kind of giggling in the room, and everyone sort of laughs, and actually, in a way, while everyone found it funny, there was also this sense of, there it is, in a nutshell, the nostalgia that we feel for a team that was great that we know is not coming back. And his point, of course, that he was making underneath it all was, look, I haven't got what Depor got, what Depor used to have. And so if we go down, it's not just because of me, albeit he's been relegated four times.
At the start of this period, as you said, the 1992-93 season, when they ended up finishing third, the season before that, they'd very nearly been relegated.
Yes.
So
they played what was brilliantly known as the promotion at the end of the season to not go down.
What was that?
It was a sort of a playoff between the bottom of one division and the top of the other.
Oh, right.
To decide one of the relegation places, or maybe even two, I can't remember.
Right, so that happened the season before. They exploded into Super Depor, with Bebeto finishing as the top goalscorer.
Of course, Bebeto arrived in that year, 1992, yes, and went on, as you say, to be the Pichichi in 1993. 29 goals he scored that season.
Bebeto as well, one of the great things, I mean, there's lots of great things about Bebeto, but Bebeto wanted to go to Borussia Dortmund. It was basically done with Borussia Dortmund. And Deportivo La Coruña, and you know, we'll talk in a minute about Agosto César Endoiro, the president, who in a way made all this happen, and at great cost, because he put Depor into a huge amount of debt, which there was always this, well, at some point we'll deal with this, and when of course they did, that was kind of the beginning of the end. He knew that he wanted Bebeto. He knew that Bebeto wanted to go to Borussia Dortmund, that it was virtually done, and invited him to A Coruña and told him that A Coruña was very much like Rio. This is like Rio, and the Riathor Beach is like a mini Copacabana. Anyway, he had the good fortune that when Bebeto came with his wife, it was a fantastically sunny day, and they went around the city, and the wife loved it, of course, because it is really pretty.
Yeah. I mean, on a sunny day, it's not, I mean, it's still not Rio, it's...
And as the story goes, now obviously I can't stand this up, I wasn't in A Coruña at the time, as the story goes, pretty much the second the plane took off and Bebeto left, it started pissing down with rain. It's like, we've done it, we've managed to convince him.
There is that great photo of Bebeto and Mauro Silva in the full kit on the beach doing keepy uppies.
And you know, they were the two players that were kind of the beginning of this sense of, wow, this is big now. And obviously what that did was persuade other players to come. And that first generation, that first team, was very much an international team. You know, and I think Deportivo in 96, if I'm not mistaken, the first team to field an 11 of fully made up of foreigners.
So 1992-93, Bebeto comes, he's top scorer, they finish third. 1993-1994 is the season of regret, I guess, for Deportivo La Coruña, because they finished second on a very dramatic final day of the season. Do you want to explain? Because they went into the final day of the season a point ahead of Barcelona at the top of the table.
Knowing that, obviously, because they're a point ahead, they only have to match Barcelona's results. So therefore, by definition, knowing that if they win, they are league champions. They are playing against Valencia. Barcelona are playing Sevilla. As I recall it, at the Camp Nou. Barcelona actually go 1-0 down. They go on to win, I think, 5-2.
Diego Simeone scored for Sevilla.
I hadn't remembered that. And I've had this story told to me from the Barcelona side, and it's quite extraordinary. Basically, what happens is there's at the very, very end, literally the very end, Deportivo get a penalty. Donato, who normally takes penalties, is off the pitch. Two potential candidates to take the penalty, Bebeto and Jukic. There's a slight, shall we say, discrepancy in the versions of the story as to whether Bebeto didn't want it because he bottled it.
Because he had missed a penalty a few weeks before.
I'm not honestly sure when. And there's discrepancy as whether he bottled it or whether Jukic said, "I'll take it." Now, if you watch the footage, you can see that Jukic is going to miss. You can see that he looks terrified. There's this kind of big intake of breath just before he runs up, and you can kind of sort of sense that big intake of breath doesn't quite do enough. He's like, he hasn't quite filled his lungs. And so, basically, score the penalty, you're champions. Don't score the penalty, you're not champions. It really is as simple as that. I was told this story by Chicky Biggity Stein, by Michael Laudrup, and by Andoni Zubizarreta, who are living this in the Camp Nou. Says there's and Eusebio Sacristán, who I believe might even... No, Chicky was a sub that day. He's in the dressing room watching this on TV. The players in the stadium. Michael Laudrup says there's a moment, it's a very last minute, where the Camp Nou goes silent and everyone on the pitch stops because obviously they know that their fate is in the hands of what's happening in La Coruña. And everyone on the pitch stops. He says literally the game stops because something's happened there. And the place falls silent. There's a penalty in La Coruña. By the time the penalty is taken, the Barcelona game has just finished. So they're waiting on this moment, and there's a silence, and then suddenly, of course, there's this huge roar. And I can't remember if it was Chicky or Eusebio now who told me the story in the dressing room. He said, genuinely, we threw ourselves on the floor. It's like everyone's like on the floor, sort of rolling around the floor like Homer Simpson doing that sort of circular thing. Going absolutely crazy because Jukic misses the penalty against Valencia, saved by the Valencian keeper
Gonzalez, who then celebrates a lot.
And of course, this is the origins of one of those strange rivalries in Spain, the Deportivo Valencia rivalry. Partly because at the time, Depor fans were like, "You bastards, why is this such a big thing for you? Why are you cheering about this?" Everyone loved Deportivo. Everyone wanted Deportivo to win the league. This is the third year in a row that Barcelona's dream team wins the league on the final day, being really quite jammy, to be perfectly honest.
Why were Valencia celebrating?
Yeah, it's funny
so
that
wildly.
It's almost as if they had some sort of financial
incentive.
Yeah.
So tell us the financial story is obviously that they had been paid by Barcelona for this. This obviously didn't come out until much later.
It was sort of alleged at the time, but it was confirmed later.
And this was, you know, something that happened a lot, and I suspect probably still does happen.
But the details of it, some kind of roadside meeting.
Yes, yeah, roadside meeting,
station,
money handed station, over.
Millions
of
pesetas handed over to Valencia, who denies Deportivo La Coruña a first ever league title. They finished second in the 1993-94 season. The season after, though, they got some kind of revenge, didn't they?
Yeah, they got to the Copa del Rey final against Valencia.
Yes.
This is the 11-minute final.
It's been a pretty special Copa del Rey final for all kinds of reasons, not least because it started one day and it finished 3 days later.
There was a storm and it started raining very heavily, and then the rain turned to hail, and the footage is amazing. I don't know if you've seen it. Have a look on YouTube. It's sensational. Of the players running off the pitch trying to cover their heads because that hail is going to make their skulls bleed. 11 minutes to go. I believe it's 1-1 at this point. Off they go, and they have to come back 3 days later to play the final 11 minutes. And Depor win it in those 11 minutes. There isn't even extra time.
Yeah. No, incredible.
With a goal from Santa Elena, I believe.
Finishing second in La Liga as well, so maintaining that really strong push.
They went 5 years in a row finishing in the top three, but that's later. That's not this
that's
era.
Not,
that's
yeah,
that's
yeah.
the second era.
This time was just the 3 years, as you say. It was third, second, second, and then they dropped off to ninth in 95-96.
1997.
John Toshack.
Yes. 1997. Another Brazilian comes, a high-cheekboned Brazilian who had his best years in Greece, obviously, but Rivaldo.
Yeah.
Rivaldo comes for one season, and absolutely.
That was the season I lived in Oviedo.
Ah, Rivaldo. Did you see him in the flesh?
Absolutely incredible. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a player! I mean, obviously, I'm not telling anyone anything they don't know that yeah. Rivaldo was incredible, but no one really knew very much about him, and then he turns up at Depor. It's like, wow, this guy's. And of course, Barcelona bought him at the end of that season to replace Ronaldo, Brazilian Ronaldo, who'd just gone.
I mean, Depor obviously had something in terms of scouting network or connections, because these were players, when they came in, they weren't the names they later were. You know, when they brought in Bebeto, this was, you know, that was before the 94 World Cup, when they brought in Mauro Silva.
He hadn't rocked the baby yet.
They weren't these massive names. So they were doing something right in terms of identifying this talent. And
Lendoiro's version of the events is there was a Galician guy in Brazil.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know.
I'm sure there was.
I'd like to think it wasn't quite as simple as that, but there was a Galician guy in Brazil.
That team of Super Depor in the 90s, as you mentioned, obviously it had Rivaldo, it had Bebeto, it had a man who you've frequently referred to as sort of the cuddliest man in football in
Donato.
Your articles, Donato. Yeah. Well, why is he the cuddliest? Because, you know,
because he was a little bit round.
His physical appearance.
Corpulent.
Or did something inspire?
Corpulent, I think he said. He was also. Always seemed to be kind of so gentle in the way he's put. He did this curious advert. I must admit, it's years since I've seen it, so it's probably if we can find it on YouTube, and I was looking for it yesterday and couldn't see it. He did this curious advert that I think if we watch it now might not be the way I remember it, but I'm going to tell it anyway. You remember that famous Lucasaid advert in the UK of John Barnes going to his locker after the game, and he's like, you know, after 90 minutes of sheer hell, you're going to need something that gets you fast. That's not really how John Barnes speaks, but it was a little bit like that. Anyway, it was John Barnes' Lucasaid advert.
Yeah.
Bebeto did something broadly similar.
Donato
did something broadly similar, but with the Bible. So it's him in the locker talking about the Bible. He was very, very devout, as indeed was Juan Carlos Valeron, of whom later on.
Yeah.
And he basically does this advert in this curious sort of Spanish-Portuguese that he spoke, which was never really Spanish and never really Portuguese. I suppose that's Galician for you. and he was just sort of, everybody loved him.
Yeah.
A midfielder who went back to centre-back, who scores the goal that wins them the league, who kept playing until he was 40, just it's impossible not to love Donato.
Having talked about some of the imports, it's worth mentioning a homegrown player as well, Fran, who was a hometown boy, spent his whole career at Depor. I think could have gone to Madrid and Barca once or twice, didn't.
And actually regretted that. Did end up regretting not going to Real Madrid, which is a pity, because I would like to think that he would embrace that idea, that he would feel pleased that he never did it. But yeah, the guy who played in the third division with him.
Fran is a name that we'll come back to, obviously.
One of the very first people I interviewed in Spain.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I interviewed him when Man United were going to play Deportivo, presumably in the Champions League. This must be, I'm guessing, 2000. And going to interview him, and everyone was raving about Beckham. And he did an interview with me in which he said, I don't know why people talk about Beckham. The one I like is Ryan Giggs.
No, fair enough.
Yeah,
no, it's probably right.
And I mean, he was a left winger, which probably helps, but he was very different to Giggs. Giggs obviously was athletic, direct, very quick. Fran never ran past anyone, but it was kind of touch and technique and the ability to pass the ball. A really lovely player.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Going for your first ever run around the park. Literally running errands all over town. Running for the finish line and your personal best. If you run, you're a runner. Find the shoes and clothes to run your way at newbalance.com/running. New Balance. Run your way.
The holidays have arrived early with Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale. Upgrading window coverings can be a minor project with a major impact. Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. Browse premium blinds, shades, shutters. We have your patio covered too. And get unlimited window treatments installed for one low cost. Free shipping and Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale now. Save up to 45% plus premium doorbusters. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
So that Super Depot team having great success in the 90s. The pinnacle, though, would come in 2000, the 1999-2000 season, when they would be crowned champions under the auspices of manager Javier Irureta, a man you...
Irureta's a brilliant geezer.
Irureta, sorry, yes, you know, yeah. you know him, you know him well.
Yeah, I got locked in the stadium with him.
Yes,
I got locked in midfield with him.
I was, you know, having a bit of a Google, and if you look at some photos of him when he was a young man in the '70s, and if you've seen any of these,
playing athletic,
he looks
with
Luis so Aragonés in that. Cool.
Yeah.
Like he had a look to him, and then went on to be, before he arrived at Depor, his managerial career was quite nomadic. Like, he was at Oviedo, though, of course. Yeah, he was at Racing, he was at Athletic, he was at Real Sociedad, then he went to Celta, then he went to Depor, where he had his longest and most.
It was all in the north, you'll notice. Spell, and then when he went down, I think it was Betis he went to, it all fell apart. Because you just shouldn't get out of the north when you're very much. It's curious that you should say he was cool, because one of the things that I always found quite endearing about him at Depor was that he sort of was the embodiment of not trying to be cool. You know, he
wore
the same ropey cagoule all the time. There's great footage of him losing a piece of chewing gum, it falling out his mouth, dropping the floor, him picking it up and thinking,
meh.
But then actually, to be fair to him, getting a water bottle and rinsing it before popping it back in. Footage of him sticking it under the table in the press room to do the press conference and then taking it back again and putting it back in afterwards. And I'm sure it must be the same piece of chewing gum for the best part of a decade.
So it goes down to the final day of the season again in 2000, doesn't it? And again, it's Barcelona or Deportivo La Coruña. I think also mathematically Real Zaragoza had a chance of winning the year.
It was a curious year that year. Yeah. And Madrid weren't even in the top four.
Well, talking of Madrid, I was going to say it's worth going back to a key game probably just before the end of that season, February 2000. Depor against Real Madrid at Riazor. Depor in bad form. It's match day 23, Sid.
Is it?
It is. Okay. I read about it. And that was the game that Depor won 5-2. That was the game of the famous Jalminia Lambretta, which actually I was saying to Sid before we started recording, I was reading the El Mundo match report from that game.
Yeah.
Match report doesn't mention the Lambretta. It's not mentioned. Because actually, that play, and how do you describe a Lambretta? He flicks the ball from behind him over his head and also over the defenders, Jalminia.
Yeah,
to land.
Between the 2 feet. I think it gets called a rainbow flick these
days.
Yeah,
rainbow flick. It actually comes to nothing.
God knows why.
Rainbow flick?
Yeah, I think in English people call it a rainbow flick.
If you speak to the cool kids these days.
Wow.
And anyway, it's now.
By cool, I mean 5-year-olds.
It's probably now the most iconic moment of Jalminia's career. It's not mentioned in the match reports on the day because it didn't actually come to anything. But shortly after that, I think Mackay scored, then Jalminia scored a free kick. They went on to beat Real Madrid 5-2, and that was maybe the key moment in turning it around and getting
Speaking very briefly of Madrid, there's often an assumption that kind of Super Depor starts with another victory against Madrid, 2-0 down against Real Madrid in 92. They win 3-2, Bebeto scores two of them, and a lot of people would kind of identify that as the beginning of Super Depor.
Well, and Madrid had that 17-year run where they didn't win at Riazor.
Yeah. The curse of Riazor.
Which, does that end with Guti's back heel?
Yes. Yes, in 2011.
Which I still think is slightly overrated. That's another debate for another day.
Stop it. So anyway, it goes down to the final day of the season between Depor and Barca, essentially. And it was curious because it was Depor playing Espanyol and Celta playing Barcelona.
Yeah.
And Celta actually beat Barcelona and Depor actually beat Espanyol. So,
yes. Yeah, there wasn't the drama, although the footage of the response to Donato's goal, which is a near post header from a corner, is brilliant.
So they finally did it.
They finally won the league. It's
6 years later.
It's genuinely extraordinary. And admittedly, as I said, it was a very strange league title. It was a league title in which they were Depor only, as I said, they got beaten 11 times. They only won 5 of their away games all season. There was a sort of a sense that the least the least bad team won the league.
Wow.
And this was by no means the best of these Depor teams. In fact, you know, it's nowhere near as good as the one in 94.
Yeah.
It's certainly not as good as the Depor team from the early two, for the sort of 2 or 3 years afterwards, when of course they get to European Cup semi-final and so on. But it's an extraordinary achievement.
Then comes the period where they finish in the top three for 5 straight years. So champions in 2000, second in 2001, second in 2002, third in 2003, and third in 2004. In between all that, in 2002, there is one of the most famous games in Spanish football. It is known as El Centenariazo. And it is not a word that we say a lot at Real Madrid TV.
No.
Hasn't been mentioned ever.
Because, of course, this was the final of the Copa del Rey in 2002. On the 100th anniversary of Real Madrid's foundation, it was held that year. It was at the Bernabeu that year, the Copa del Rey.
It was all set up for the perfect celebration for Real Madrid at home.
Yeah, there was no works going on the pitch. It was fine to hold it at the Bernabeu that year. And It was Deportivo La Coruña against Real Madrid. Real Madrid, the massive favourites. And yeah, Depo won by 2-1.
I mean, you look at that Real Madrid team. You know, this is, it's Zidane, it's Figo, it's Raul, it's Morientes, it's Makaleli, it's Roberto Carlos. It's the Real Madrid team.
It shouldn't have been Figo, for well, it's worth. He had an ankle injury and it should, McManaman should have played.
You know, it's the Real Madrid bench, team that went on to, of course, to win the Champions League at Hampton that year. And yet Depo did them in their own backyard.
The full game is on YouTube and I had a watch back to quite a lot of it the other day. Depo played really well. They were so good.
They were genuinely a good team. It was no fluke. It was no, you know, stay deep and counter-attack.
No.
I mean, forgive me for saying this, Real Madrid fans, but this is one of the most brilliant things that's ever happened in Spanish football.
I mean, that, when I say it's one of the biggest things that has happened, it's still remembered. But why is it so big?
Right, there's a number of reasons. This is this obviously has to be seen through the prism of Real Madrid, and as so much of Spanish football does. As you say, it's Real Madrid's 100th birthday. Real Madrid had lobbied FIFA to have no football played on their 100th birthday as a kind of a mark of respect for their 100th birthday. The centenary was everywhere that year. It was genuinely impossible to get away from it. It was huge. I mean, it was genuine. A lot of it was brilliant. But obviously, for people who weren't Real Madrid fans, there was a kind of moment where everyone was like, good God, we're sick of this. Real Madrid had asked for the final to be held on their birthday. So it was, the date of it was changed, the stadium was changed, so that they could play the Copa del Rey final on their birthday. It was all set up for them to win it. Real Madrid's players knew they were on a hiding to nothing. It was basically, you win the Copa del Rey, or, you know, you win the Copa del Rey. There was no other debate. Depo were there just to kind of make up the numbers. That's certainly the way they feel. Here's the bit that does it, one of the things that does it. Of course, because although this is a Bernabeu, it's a Copa del Rey final, so you have to have equal number of tickets. I was there that day.
Yeah.
The whole of the North Stand is Deportivo fans. You've got 30,000 Deportivo fans filling kind of the North Stand and a bit of either side.
Yeah.
Huge numbers of Depo fans. They go 2 hours early. The Madrid fans don't. It's a Bernabeu game. They kind of turn up 5 minutes before kickoff. I mean, that's perhaps a little unfair. But you know, there was a real sense that the Depo fans were making something of this, even though the sensation was, we're here so that they can win. Depo's players go out to warm up a couple of, you know, an hour and a half before kickoff, and they see this, just one end of the stadium completely full. Wow, this is pretty good. And then there's a story that I'm not sure which Deportivo player it is, but he goes to Flavio Conceição, who'd just gone to Real Madrid, two Brazilians. So one of Depo's Brazilian players, I'm assuming it was probably Donato, but I can't remember who it was, speaks to him before the game and says, so, you know, should we meet for dinner after the game? We're going to have dinner in Madrid and go out and stuff. And Flavio Conceição says, I can't, we've got all the celebrations and stuff, haven't we?
Well, they didn't.
He runs back to the dressing room, of course, and tells all the players, his lads,
they
think they've got a celebration, and they didn't. The celebrations are quite extraordinary. Deportivo doing a lap of honour,
and the fans 25,000
Depo fans singing happy birthday to you.
And it's not just that Depo won it. They, you know, they scored after like 6 minutes. They went 1-0 up. They went 2-0 up, I think, before 40 minutes. It was done. You know,
Real pulled the goal admittedly, back, Madrid did pull one back. And at that stage, you think it's going to happen. That year, by the way, Madrid were terrible.
And they won the Champions League. Well, not for the first time.
That's quite true, actually. Yeah.
Sergio González is the current manager of Valladolid.
Yes.
It's him. Yeah. It's him. He scored a very nice goal. And then Diego Tristan scored another nice goal.
Diego Tristan, who you got to love for all sorts of reasons, apart from the fact he was a brilliant player. But that great and now very famous line where Florentino Perez wants to sign him for Real Madrid and he has a conversation with him and he's a little bit concerned about the fact that, let's say, Tristan quite likes going out. And he says this to Tristan, he says, a little bit worried about this. And Tristan says, Presidente, what do you want, a footballer or a monk?
And he did not join Real Madrid.
He did not join Real Madrid.
He did finish as Pichichi in 2002 with 21 goals. Then after that, in 2003, Roy Mackay finished Pichichi with 29 goals.
I mean,
goals.
What a strike duo, Tristan and Mackay. Come on.
He was the last Deportivo player to ever finish as a Pichichi, Roy Mackay, in 2003. Mm. Just a bit of perspective, their top goal scorer last season was Adrián with 9 goals.
Yeah.
And they went down, obviously. Yeah. Just a bit of perspective.
Also, I mean, it's worth pointing out something out here, and Al's just said what a striking partnership that was. In a way, the reason those two won the Pichichi is because that wasn't a strike partnership, because the person providing all the passes for them, just like Peter Beardsley used to make top scorers of people, was Juan Carlos Valerón.
He was.
You've got to love Valerón.
We did. We gave him love, I think, on the 21st Century La Liga Legends podcast.
Live with his mum and his sister in a flat near the stadium.
Champions League. We have to talk about the Champions League.
I mean, is there anyone that they didn't beat in the Champions League in those years?
Do the list, Al, because the list is absolutely outrageous.
They won away at PSG, Manchester United, Arsenal, Bayern, and we'll talk about Milan, Juventus, pretty much all the big teams in Europe they beat in this spell.
I remember the one at Highbury. They were absolutely incredible.
Were you there?
Just totally took Arsenal.
I don't think I was there for that game. I was talking about to Sid. I remember the game in the UEFA Cup when Jalminia got sent off for, well, Grimaldi feigned a headbutt and Jalminia got sent off. I think I was there for that game. I don't think I was there, but I remember watching the one you mean when they were
Jalminia
sensational. Jalminia,
of course, had a little bit of previous when it comes to headbutting.
Did he?
He headbutted Habo Irueta in training once. And this was caught on camera. I mean, it was more kind of a head lean, you know, that kind of thing footballers do. But he headbutted his manager. Irueta turns up in the press conference afterwards, sits down in front of everyone, takes off his glasses, goes, "See, look, not a mark on me. It's all right, no big deal."
Wow. Some of those big Champions League nights. Tell me about the one in Paris, because I wasn't aware of this one in Paris.
The one in Paris? Well, you've got two really kind of crazy ones.
Yeah.
One spread across two games. The one in Paris is just one game. 3-0 down.
3-0 down at the Parc des Princes against PSG.
And they win 4-3.
And they win 4-3.
That's insane.
Yeah, absolutely insane. Crazy. But it is not as crazy as the most memorable comeback in Champions League history, and apart from last year.
Maybe Istanbul is probably the most famous, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe. All right. But it's a pretty big
one. But this one's pretty big. When you look at all of the circumstances, they're playing against Milan. This is the European champions.
It's Carlo Ancelotti's Milan.
Ancelotti's Milan. Probably the favourites that year for the competition. In the first leg at San Siro, Depor actually go 1-0 up. They are leading in that game. Milan then go and score four goals in 8 minutes, I think, to win that first leg 4-1.
The 7th of April 2004 is the second leg.
2 weeks later.
2 weeks later. Milan line up with Dida in goal, and it's Cafu, Maldini, Pancaro, Nesta, Gattuso, Pirlo, Seedorf, Kaká, Thomasson and Shevchenko.
I mean, apart from Thomasson, that's a pretty good team, isn't it? Yeah.
And that Milan team, that season, they hadn't conceded an away goal in the Champions League all season.
I did not know that. That's quite exciting.
And at that point, no team in the Champions League era, no team had come back from a three-goal first-leg deficit. So if Depor were going to do it, they were going to do something that no team had done in the modern era.
The funny thing about this game is that Milan actually had a couple of chances to score, even before Depor get the first, which I think is after 5 or 6 minutes anyway. They had a couple of chances. They didn't take them. And then they had a one-on-one, I think, when it was 1-0 anyway. They had chances, but Depor, as you need in football, they had a little bit of luck and they took their chances.
3-0 up at half-time. Yeah. Mm. So obviously at that point, it's 4-4 in aggregate and they're going through. But the sensation in the stadium is, we'll throw this away. And they didn't. 4-0.
Well, you can see when Pandiani scores the first goal, and there's a muted celebration.
Truck driving man Pandiani. Yeah. He used to go to training and
tucks it in
truck.
The bottom corner. But there's not wild celebrations because, you know, it's not going to happen. Valeron scores the second. They sort of start to believe. Luque scores the third. And that's when the play starts to go absolutely mental.
Yeah. Absolutely. The most memorable comeback in Spanish football history in the Champions League until Barcelona's unbelievable stuff.
And they went into the semi-finals, of course, against Jose Mourinho's Porto.
And they were completely and utterly robbed. I mean, forgive me for saying that. That Porto team was bloody horrible.
But what do you mean robbed?
Right, so they were robbed because, I mean, apart from the fact that Porto team was horrible.
Yeah, all right, but that's not robbery.
That's not robbery. What happens is there's a moment between Andrade, the Portuguese centre-back from Deportivo, and Derlei, I believe it was, anyway, a Porto player who's one of his mates, and they're kind of messing around, playing with each other, and Andrade gives him a kind of a kick in the back, but they're literally just sort of standing there, giving him a kick in the back. The referee sends him off. Not penalty, the nil draw. The referee sends him off. He's like, well, we're mates, we were just messing around. And this referee sends him off. So Andrade, who was very, very good indeed, by the way, I don't know how many people remember Andrade, and he wasn't maybe at Deportivo long enough to kind of cement the status that people like Naivet had, Donato, and so on. He misses the second leg. In his place plays César Martín, who's now, by the way, one of the Director General or Director of Institutional Affairs at Real Oviedo. A lovely bloke, enormous centre-back. He's the one that commits the penalty in the second leg. Porto win 1-0. One of the worst football teams ever to make a European Cup final.
But one of the best.
One of the best, most greatest achievements. I'm not taking that away from, but they weren't nice to watch.
So there we go. That
and everyone was gutted.
That was Euro Depor and Super Depor. Deportivo La Coruña, who are currently seventh in the second division. So
and all of this, I mean, one of the things that obviously that is behind all this begins with César Augusto Lendoiro, the president of Deportivo, who starts this having made a success success of Liceo Caixa Galicia, the local roller hockey team, made them the best roller hockey team around. He takes over Deportivo. He was famous for negotiating, and I just want to chuck this story in at the end because I love this story. He was famous for negotiating and getting deals done at a restaurant called El Manjar. And perhaps this embodies the whole kind of spend loads of money, don't worry, it'll be all right thing, and then it coming back to bite you. Many years later, I think it's 2010, 2011, when Deportivo are going through administration, 160 million euros in debt, of course, administration. You see the list of the people that you owe money to. They own this restaurant, 107 thousand euros.
From, it's a lot of dinners.
From lots and lots of dinners where they signed lots and lots of players.
Wow.
You were saying he used that restaurant as his office. He was basically there all night. And if you wanted to go and get a deal done, that was the place
Nuno, the current...
I mean, he does look like he's had £107,000 worth of dinners.
Exactly. Nuno, the current Wolves coach, of course, was the first deal that Jorge Mendes ever did, taking him to Deportivo La Coruña. And the way that Mendes tells the story is that he knew that Lendoiro was always at this restaurant. There was 100 metres or so between the restaurant and Lendoiro's office. And so he would literally drive from Portugal and wait by the office to make a 150-metre sales pitch between the office and the restaurant before Lendoiro ducked into the restaurant, ignoring him. Of course, Mendes became big enough that Lendoiro then starts inviting him to restaurants, and Mendes played a big part in this whole kind of Galician revival. But yeah, El Manjar was the place.
There we go.
Where the magic happened.
We'll leave it there. Thank you very much for listening to the first episode of TSFB Presents... Classic teams.
Still a great title.
Good. We're not sure who the next classic team is, but it's going to be a good one.
So, well, we'll take their suggestions and maybe answer some questions if there are specific questions people have about these teams. Obviously, you know, if you want to ask about the Delantera Eléctrica era Real Oviedo, feel free.
Those will be removed before they get acid and you'll never see them.
Thanks for listening. See ya.
Cheerio.